You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Hi everyone, Paul here, and just a quick message from me to let you know that if you are looking to improve the performance of your team, no matter whether it is a work, sporting or community one, then we've developed some tools to help. On the website, you will find our Thriving Teams Diagnostic, which uses insights from the more than 200 great coaches we have interviewed to challenge you with a series of questions to help you understand how your team is performing. It's free and only takes a few minutes to complete. If you'd like to know more, you can check out our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Lessons from the Great Coaches podcast.
I've learned that you don't do it alone.
You learn so many different things from so many different coaches.
That's an elite learning environment.
Failure is not a problem. How you deal with it is a problem.
How to be resilient.
How important it is to infuse joy in the process of learning.
To be a good coach, you've got to give more than you take.
What an interesting life it is to be a leader.
My name is Paul Barnett, and you are listening to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we explore leadership through the lens of high-performance sport by interviewing great coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us lead better. As the podcast has grown, the great coaches we have interviewed have shared so much insight and wisdom that we decided to create episodes dedicated entirely to the ideas that have resonated with us the most. Today's episode is on the topic of underdogs, and Grant and I are joined for the discussion by Sean Murray, who has just written a fantastic book called If Gold Is Our Destiny, How a Team of Mavericks Came Together for Olympic Glory. If you would like to join us for a future episode to discuss a coaching or leadership topic that is close to your heart, then please contact us using the details in the show notes. And now, please enjoy our discussion with Sean Murray.
The Lessons from the Great Coaches Podcast.
Good day, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Great Coaches Podcast. My name is Grant Liversage, and together with Paul Barnett, we're going to be talking to Sean Murray about a team that was the underdogs and how they prevailed, and draw some lessons from the story around leading teams in the sport and corporate environment. So I'd like to ask Sean to introduce himself. Over to you, Sean.
Great. Thank you, Grant. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I'm excited to talk about a team that I spend a lot of time researching and learning about and writing a book. It's the 1984 U.S. Men's Olympic Volleyball Team. And I recently published a book called If Gold Is Our Destiny, How a Team of Mavericks Came Together for Olympic Glory. And it was a fascinating process to study a team that really was a true underdog, that 2 years before the Olympics finished 13th in their sporting world championship and somehow won a gold medal. And I'm excited to kind of go into that. But just to give a little background about who I am and what I do, in addition to, you know, writing this book, I help organizations and teams reach their full potential, helping them build better teams, build better cultures, and leaders kind of get the most out of their teams and organizations. And I'm based here in the United States in Seattle, Washington, and work with mostly mid to large size companies and executive teams doing just that. And I wanted to write a book that where I studied a team, how a team became the best in the world at what they did. And I happened to have a personal connection to this team, this underdog team we're going to talk about. My father was the, well, he took on the role of, they called the team psychologist. He wasn't really a sports psychologist. He was there to try to help the team become a better team, which is a really fascinating, process. You know, what do you do to bring a group of individuals together to do something that they couldn't do collectively? They couldn't do on their own, that they could only do collectively. And so my father was a part of that team as a team psychologist. And I got to know the coach of that team, Doug Beal. And when I thought about writing a book about a team, that was the first team I thought of. And I called up my friend, Doug Beal, who was the coach of the gold medal winning 84 team, U.S. men's volleyball team. And I said, Doug, I'm thinking about writing a book about that team. It was a special team. And he said, I think you're right. It was a special team and I'd love to help you. And it was his help and guidance, connecting me with the players and others that got the project started. So that's a little bit about me.
You mentioned that what you do is help leaders primarily in the corporate world, and yet you're writing a book about sports. And what's the linkage between the story of underdogs and this team and the leadership and lessons from sport?
Yeah, well, you know, people learn, I believe, through stories. You know, I think stories are very important. I mean, you guys get this and how you do podcasts and just, it's a very human way to learn and relate to others. And I found that people love sports stories. And there's really some great analogies between especially teams in sports and teams in business, right? I mean, we can watch a soccer or, you know, football team. The World Cup is going on, you know, probably as we speak right now. And, you know, you watch a team come together and you can learn from that and apply that to other parts of your world. And people just generally gravitate towards these stories, especially around Olympic stories, you know, connections, the emotional and connections that you don't normally get if you're just talking about maybe other business teams. And so I find that these stories resonate. And, and so I thought, let's use a sports story. I actually read a book called Boys in the Boat, which is, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that story, but it's another story about an American, Olympic team. It happened to be a crew team that won a gold medal in the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, which was the Nazi Olympics, and they beat the Nazi boat. You know, I mean, it's just an incredible story. Another underdog story. I happened to read that book and I thought, you know, there's so many great lessons in this team that I could use to teach people in business. And I find when I talk to business executives, they often use sports metaphors, right? So anyway, it was a natural fit and people can make the leap. And so that's why I decided to write a book about a sports team, even though I'm trying to teach people in business.
So tell us the story of the team.
Well, the team is, you know, to understand this team, this is the 1984 Olympics. It was in Los Angeles. 4 years before that was probably the biggest underdog story of all time in the United States, which was the 1980 men's Olympic hockey team. And that's a story that almost everyone universally knows here in the United States. I don't know how well known it is globally, but it's because they beat the Soviet Union, which was absolutely dominant in hockey. This story that I wrote was about volleyball, and volleyball is not as popular as hockey, and the story is not as well known, but I think it has every bit the same amount of emotion and interest, and it's a very similar story in coming from so low to so high, right? From so be such an underdog to becoming the best in the world. And they did have to beat the Soviet Union. I'll have to kind of explain that because the Soviet Union was not, the Eastern Bloc countries were not at the 1984 Olympics. If you remember, they were boycotting that Olympics. But so I will talk a little bit about that. But that's to understand the backdrop of this team. In the 1970s, even though volleyball was invented in the United States, the national team was severely underperforming. What would happen was, the United States had a lot of talented players because the size of the country, the fact that volleyball was invented here. It's not that there weren't a lot of great players. California was a hotbed of volleyball. It still is today. You know, imagine the beaches of Southern California, kids growing up playing volleyball. They had players, but what the USA Volleyball at the time did was they would bring together these sort of all-star players a few months before the European tournaments in May or June, and they'd pick a team of 12 or 14 all-star players. They'd have a few practices together. They'd throw a coach at this team, and they'd go off to Europe, and they would just, they would get beat bad. And they had no success doing this, even though they had talented players. And of course, looking back on it now, you can sort of see that it's hard to get a team together quickly, especially with big egos, you know, highly talented players. They weren't gelling. They weren't a cohesive unit. They weren't on the same page, all those things. But that was the way that the U.S. did it at the time, thinking, well, we've got these great stars. Let's just get them out there, and they're going to, you know, they're going to do what they do, and they're going to win. They didn't win. One of the players in the 1970s was a gentleman named Doug Beal. And he, my father was actually working as a team psychologist with the team in the 70s. And this player, Doug Beal, thought, you know, this, my father's name was Don Murray. And he said, you know, this Don Murray guy that's preaching this team building, I think we need to do more of that if we want to become a better team. And we're going off, we're playing teams from Poland, from Bulgaria, from Italy, from the Soviet Union that were playing year round, that really had a team environment. And so when that young player, Doug Beal, was just tired of being humiliated, he became the next coach. And he thought, you know, if we do this, let's do it right. Let's get a team together in a training center, spend more than a few weeks learning, and let's do some of these practices about learning about each other, building trust, creating feedback processes for the players to give feedback to the coaches to give feedback to the players. They build our communication on and off the court. So these are some of the things they started to do to become a team. Even though they had talent, like, let's get better at becoming a team. And so that's where the United States was in the early 1980s, knowing that they were going to host the Olympics in 84. They'd have an automatic bid. They hadn't been to the Olympics since 1968. And they thought, well, you know, at least we're going to be in the Olympics, first time in 16 years or something like that. And so, you know, that's kind of the state of the affairs. They had a player that believed in team. They had a coach who was a former player who believed in this whole team aspect. And that's where they were about 1981 or 82.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And so, Sean, you paint the picture of they had the opportunity, but it was a long shot. So what happened then?
Yeah, it definitely was a long shot. Most people in the volleyball world didn't give this team much of a chance to medal at this Olympics. You know, in 1982, 2 years before the Olympics, the team went to Argentina for the World Cup, and they finished 13th. They had a couple matches where they were close to winning, and then they blew it. You know, things which often happens in volleyball or in sports, you know, the momentum shifts. How do you react? How do you deal when things aren't going your way on a team or in sports? That's the difference between great teams and championship teams. They're able to overcome that. They have the confidence, they have the trust, they have the resilience to overcome these swings in momentum. And so this team did not have that. You know, they went down to Argentina. They finished 13th. The Soviet Union at the time was they had won the gold medal in 1980, and they'd won the world championships, let's say, in 78, 80, and 82. So this was the Soviet Union was the most dominant team in the world at the time, and they won the world championships. And it was sort of as dominant as Soviet hockey was in 1980. It's the Soviet volleyball team. And so here's the U.S., you know, 13th, not even in the same league. And the coaches thought, you know, something's got to change. You know, what are we going to do? They threw around some ideas. And one idea they came up with was, you know, what this team needs is a shared significant life experience, you know, something that they do together outside of volleyball to bring them together so they get to know each other. There were a lot of personalities, strong personalities on this team. There was a bit of a divide between the East players from the Eastern part of the United States and the Western part of the United States. They called them the Easties and the Westies. There's a bit of a tribal fault lines between the different colleges where these young men went, you know, between UCLA and USC and Pepperdine, these big colleges in Southern California. So it wasn't a team that had real strong friendships across the board. There were a few pockets of strong friendships. So for all these reasons and this whole idea of resilience, they thought, let's do something outside of volleyball. The first idea was to send them to boot camp. Grant, it was let's send these young men to become Marines. You know, we'll 10 weeks of Marine training or something, or 2 weeks or whatever they could do. And they called up the Marine base, which was close by. This team was based in San Diego. And, the U.S. Marine Corps said, no, we're not going to put your volleyball team through our training. So they thought, okay, well, let's, and they came up with, or they came across this organization called Outward Bound, which actually started in the UK. And Outward Bound is an organization that takes people through an experiential learning process, usually at the time it was 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks, it was fairly long, where you go out into the wilderness and you learn skills. And as you are out there learning, surviving in some way, you're learning life skills around how to survive, how to build resilience, how to care for other people, not just yourself, but others on your team. So it's groups of people that they take these trips on. And that was the idea. The coaches said, well, they approached Outward Bound, and Outward Bound said that they would design a course for this team. And they thought it would be great if this course was in the winter, because these players were mostly from Southern California. So they were more comfortable in the warm climates. You know, they grew up playing volleyball on the beach. They weren't as familiar with the mountains, with the snow. And so they designed a 3-week course through the mountains of Utah, in the Canyonlands National Park in the United States, in the middle of winter in January of 1983. And the players absolutely did not want to go on this experiential learning process. You know, their feeling was, you get better at volleyball on the volleyball court. You know, why would we take time out of practicing on the volleyball court to go try to get better at volleyball by snowshoeing around Utah with 70-pound packs and snowshoes? And so they were adamantly against it. And Doug Beal, the coach, to his credit, said, no, we're going to do this. And his assistant coaches, and they ended up flying into Utah, and actually Colorado, and then driving down into Utah and getting off a bus in January of 1983, strapping on snowshoes. And all of a sudden they were, you know, 5 miles up into a pass about 8,000 feet in elevation, and complete silence. And these players were in another world all of a sudden. And they had to learn how to survive out there in the wilderness. And that experience was the beginning, in my opinion, of building towards becoming the best team in the world, not just the best team in 84, but a dominant team for about 6 years. And it started right there.
That's a fantastic story, this whole notion of building resilience through shared experience. And I wonder, Paul, are there examples in your interviews with the great coaches on underdogs and overcoming odds in the way that Sean is talking about it?
Oh, it's a great story, Sean. I mean, we interviewed Doug a couple of months back, and he really picked up the story from the Olympics forward. So it's great to hear the context and the backstory to the team that he led to that gold medal. But Grant, I do have an example of coaches talking about underdogs. And the first one comes from Sean Dyche. Now, up until early 2022, when he was sacked, Sean was actually the longest serving coach in the English Premier League. And he coached a team called Burnley. And I asked him specifically about how he was able to create such a competitive team at Burnley, given that they had much less resources than their rivals, their competitors. And I'll insert here what Sean said about underdogs, or as he referred to them at the time, positive realities. And here's that quote now from Sean.
We sort of worked on the idea of reality, really. You know, positive realities, as I call it. So I never BS the team. I wouldn't stand in front of them when you're playing Man City and go, these lot are crap, lads. I'd say, look, we know these are proper players. These are proper, proper players. But if we can make the game about us, if we can make it uncomfortable, if we can make it feel like it's not their kind of formatted game, then that just knocks them out of kilter. And if we knock them out of kilter, do a few get a bit disgruntled? Do they make it, you know, it feels different, it feels awkward? And we tried to use that kind of feeling amongst a group. And then it was like, build that mentality. And what about that one that is the one? What about that game when you do beat them? What about that feeling? Where, you know, how about that? How good does that feel? So we kind of, one of the best accolades I've ever been given, I remember Pep Guardiola, he was waxing lyrical about all the teams who went to Man City and they played good football and he won 5-0, obviously, every time, which he did eventually against us. But the first few seasons, he used to say, going to Burnley is like going to the dentist, and I was loving it. I said, I'm absolutely loving that. It was like the biggest compliment I think I've probably ever been given, you know what I mean, by someone of his prowess. But I met him a few times, we have a laugh about some of the stuff, you know. But you get what I mean? That was a compliment, because he was basically going, it's hard, it's awkward, it's uncomfortable, you know. And when you build that mentality, it becomes a bit of a badge of honor.
You're listening to the Lessons from the Great Coaches podcast.
Hi, everyone, and we are sorry to interrupt this episode, but if you are enjoying it and would like to listen to the rest, then you can purchase it on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com. Included in the purchase is the transcript and the videos of the coaches whose audio we have used. While you are on our site, you can also check out our insights database, where we have snipped out insights from the videos of our interviews on leadership topics like communication, coaching philosophy, and conflict. You can search through it by keyword, sport, or coach, download and share them. It's a great way of bringing in a new voice to deliver your message as a leader. Thank you again for listening, and we hope you find the material on our website helpful and inspiring.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.